Welcome to the podcast series on distinctive financial reporting for FAC 3702. My name is Marlies Els and I am one of your lecturers for this module, and I want to welcome you to this podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to go over some of the most common mistakes or problem areas in the May-June 2011 examination. To get the most out of this podcast, I think it is important that you have the question paper as well as the solution in front of you when you listen to the podcast. In this way, you can make notes and also better understand what I am talking about. I will be discussing some of the general mistakes in the paper, and then I will also discuss the mistakes or problems on each of the questions. General mistakes in the paper. Many of the students did not attempt some of the questions. It is very important that you attempt all of the questions in an exam. If you leave out one question, you need to do twice as well in the questions that you do answer to possibly achieve a pass mark. A lot of students wasted time writing out unnecessary information that was not required by the question. The question paper clearly indicates what notes are required. You will not receive any extra marks for the additional disclosure. A lot of students struggled with the time limit. During your preparation for the exams, you should practice writing under exam conditions. Time yourself so that you do not go over the 2-hour allocated time. You should allocate your time to each question as indicated on the first page of the exam question paper. Do not spend more time on a question than indicated. It has been proved that you earn the most marks during the first 20 minutes spent on a question. When you are required to do disclosure notes, make sure that you do the disclosure and that all amounts are included in the disclosure. A lot of students did all the calculations but never included the answers in the notes or left out the note entirely. You will get no marks if your calculations do not refer back to a specific note. Always show your inputs when you are using a financial calculator. Dates are extremely important when you are required to write journals. If you do not indicate the date of the journal, you will not receive any marks. Please do not make use of any abbreviations in your journal entries or when you are writing your disclosure notes. Students have different abbreviations for the same thing, which makes it very difficult to mark. Comments on question 1. Journal entries on foreign exchange transactions. One of the biggest issues in this section that you needed to identify was that the forward exchange contract was initially classified as a cash flow hedge, but changed to a fair value hedge later on. You therefore needed to make a clear distinction between the cash flow hedge and the fair value hedge. The main difference is the way in which the gains and losses on the hedge are accounted for. The gains and losses on a cash flow hedge are accounted for in the cash flow hedge reserve account. The gains and losses on the fair value hedge are accounted for in profit and loss as a foreign exchange difference. Another issue that you needed to identify was the accounting treatment of the balance in the cash flow hedge reserve. The question states that the company follows a policy to reclassify the associated gains and losses previously recognized in other comprehensive income to a profit or loss as a reclassification adjustment in the same period during which the asset acquired affects profit and loss. You needed to transfer the accumulated balance in the cash flow hedge reserve account to the statement of comprehensive income via the depreciation account. A lot of students neglected to write the depreciation journal. Remember that when the question states that you should write journals for the year ending, it means that all year-end journals should be included, and that also includes the depreciation journal. Comments on the disclosure notes in question 1. You need to disclose the different classes of property, plant and equipment separately. A column is thus needed for land, buildings and machinery. A lot of students used only one column for land and buildings. This is incorrect and you will lose marks. The standard requires that you disclose the date of the valuation, the basis used in the valuation process, and how the valuation amounts were determined. Also, if the company follows the revaluation model, the carrying amount of the land and buildings under the cost model is also required to be disclosed. A lot of students neglected to include this narrative or only included a part of it. This is easy and valuable marks you are missing out on. A revaluation or devaluation calculation will always take place at the beginning of the financial year. If the net replacement value is given at the end of the year, you need to restate it to a net replacement value at the beginning of the year to be able to calculate the revaluation or devaluation amounts. Also remember that when an asset has a residual value, it has to be taken into account when you restate your net replacement value. Deferred tax should have been calculated on the revaluation or devaluation amounts, the fair value adjustment, as well as the accelerated wear and tear of both the buildings and the machinery. Also take note that when you calculate the deferred tax on land, a tax percentage of 14% will be applied due to the fact that the carrying amount of the land will be recovered through sale only. Comments on question 2. Disclosure of intangible assets. The different classes of intangible assets should be disclosed separately. In other words, you should have a column for the purchased asset, namely the brand name, and a separate column for the internally generated asset, namely the software package. Intangible assets are not depreciated, but amortized. The terminology is important when you are dealing with the different study units. You must also indicate where in the statement of comprehensive income the amortization is included. In other words, in what line item it is included. Students missed that the internally generated software package was transferred from intangible assets to non-current assets during the year. Because of this transfer, the amortization on the software package must only be calculated for 9 months, up until the date that it is transferred. You also need to include a line item in your note to separately disclose the transfer. Students also missed that the useful life of the purchased asset changed. After the negative publicity, the useful life changed to 5 years at the end of the financial year. You were required to calculate amortization on the brand name at the beginning of the current financial year. Lastly, the standard requires that you disclose the carrying amount and remaining useful life of an intangible asset. Many students forgot to include this narrative. Disclosures of impairment loss. The standard requires that you provide a description of the events which led to the impairment. You must also disclose the amount by which the asset has been impaired, as well as the basis on which the recoverable amount is determined. And lastly, you must indicate where in the statement of comprehensive income the impairment loss is included. One of the big issues in this section was the calculation of the value in use. Students either assumed that it was zero or they calculated it incorrect. The value in use should be calculated using the expected cash flows over the forthcoming 5 years. You could either have performed a net present value calculation, or you could have done a separate present value calculation for each of the 5 years. If you do a present value calculation, it is very important that you realize that there is a time value of money factor to consider. You cannot simply add together the different cash flows and calculate the present value. You need to calculate the present value for each of the cash flows individually, taking into account the year in which it takes place. Comments on the non-current assets held for sale note. A description of the decision to sell needs to be included in the note, detailing that all the requirements for classification of as a disposal group are met. The expected date of completion needs to be disclosed as well. You should also disclose the items that form part of the disposal group and disclose the carrying amount of each of these assets, as well as the total for the disposal group at year end. You must also include a description of any impairment loss recognized in the disposal group and state where the impairment loss is included in the statement of comprehensive income. There are two important things to remember when you calculate the carrying amount of the assets. Firstly, an asset is only depreciated until the date it is reclassified as held for sale. From that date onwards, you do not depreciate the asset anymore. And secondly, inventory is always shown at the lower of its carrying amount or net realizable value. You need to identify which value is lower and use the correct value in your disclosure and calculations. When you are calculating the value of the disposal group upon initial classification, you will calculate the carrying amount of each asset and liability included in that disposal group on the date of classification. By adding all the individual carrying amounts together, you will determine the total carrying amount of the disposal group on initial classification. You must compare the carrying amount of the disposal group to the recoverable amount and determine whether there is any impairment loss. If an impairment loss is calculated on the disposal group, it should be allocated to all non-current assets that are included in the disposal group on a pro rata basis. Comments on the journals for the financial instrument. Remember that account names are important when you are doing journal notes. If you use the incorrect account name, you will not receive any marks. In this section, you needed to calculate the effective interest rate using the information given and then calculate your interest receivable based on your effective interest rate and write your journals accordingly. Lastly, when you are asked to write journals up to year end, then you should also include a journal on year end, even though the payment period does not take place on that date. A lot of students ignored the year end date and wrote the journals on the dates that the actual payment takes place. This is not correct. These are just some of the main problem areas identified during the marking of the exam scripts. If you have any other problems, please feel free to discuss them with one of the lecturers. I hope that the information provided in this podcast helps you to understand the question paper a little better and will help you with your examination at the end of the year. Good luck with the rest of your studies. I hope you enjoy this module, learn a lot from it, and have a positive outcome at the end of the semester.